Okay, thank you very much. I want to thank the organizers for the invitation. And I want to talk about random matrices and free probability theory. So it will be, again, about random matrices, but I want to give you this a little bit from the perspective of free probability theory, and thereby also maybe give you some idea what free probability theory is about. So I won't talk about free probability theory for itself, but more in the context of random matrices. And more concretely, I will talk about global fluctuations of random matrices and connect this somehow with the concept of second order freeness, which we introduced just recently. And so this is essentially joint work with James Mingo, Piotr Snyadi, and Tim Kusalik. There are two articles which you put on the archive. I also have some preprints here if anybody is interested. And the last one with Tim Kusalik is being written up, but somehow he preceded the other one. So this was a summer project which we did last year and which is quite combinatorial exploration of things going on there. Okay, so let me start and present you the types of random matrix ensembles which I'm interested in. So I will talk essentially about maybe three of the most important random matrix ensembles, namely the Gaussian random matrices, the Wishart random matrices, and the unitary random matrices. So here, just recall more or less the basic definition. So the Gaussian random matrices, of course, is a Gaussian random matrix, which is symmetric, and all the entries, apart from the symmetry condition, should be independent from each other, and each should have a Gaussian normal distribution. Okay, the Wishart random matrices, you take two Gaussian random matrices, rectangular ones, without any symmetry condition, and you multiply this one with its adjoint. And, of course, depending on the size of your rectangular matrices, you have a parameter. And the unitary random matrices is just you put the Haar measure on the group of unitary n by n matrices. So that's the three ensembles which I want to consider in the following. And let me fix some notation. So in the random matrix, that we have two types. So we have randomness and we have matrices, and the corresponding notation for the random part are expectation and covariance. The most basic things I will use in the following. And for the matrix part, of course, the trace is very important, but there is usually some confusion with the notation, in particular because you have two possibilities for the trace, and I will denote the usual unnormalized trace by capital TR and the normalized trace by this one. So the normalized trace has some advantages, in particular if n goes to infinity, because the normalized trace of the identity matrix is 1. Otherwise, it's n which explodes. Okay, but somehow both things come up very canonically. So, but in the literature, it's not used in a consistent way. So I hope there's no confusion around this. Okay, so what do I want to look at? So if I have my random matrix, let's say from one of the three ensembles, so an interesting quantity in which I'm interested in is to look on traces of powers of this random matrix. So An, let's say, is my n by n random matrix. And of course, in this whole business, always I'm interested in what happens if n goes to infinity. Well, that's where really something interesting happens. And I can take a lot of information, in particular about these global fluctuations, is contained in looking on traces of powers of my random matrices. So I'm fixing K here. And then I'm looking on the kth power of my random matrix and send n to infinity. Do this for all k, and the question is, what do I get there? And there is a lot. I mean, this is essentially well understood. So it turns out that in many cases, in particular in the three ensembles which I mentioned, this converges to a Gaussian family of random variables. Also, the trace of an to the k is a classical random variable. Okay, it's a sum over random variables. So I have one for each k, so I have a family of random variables, and I can ask about the behavior of this if n goes to infinity, and it's well known that this goes to a Gaussian family of random variables. Okay, so what I'm more interested in is not the case of one random matrix, but let's say if I have a second copy of this, so if I have another random matrix, let's say of the same ensemble, and then, of course, I can look on the corresponding traces of this, and of course it also goes to Gaussian family, but of course the interesting feature is now what happens between the two families. So in what I'm really interested is now the traces in all possible words between A and B. If I have random matrix A and B, of course I can look on all possible words here and take the traces of this for sequences K and L, and I can ask what happens to this. And of course, in order to say something, I must specify more about my random matrix ensemble, so I must specify what is the relation between A and B. And let us fix the simple situation. Let us assume that they are independent, and then one can see again, and I will talk more about this, that indeed again you get a convergence to a Gaussian family of all these random variables. And this is somehow a very big family. Well, I mean, in a sense, if you are looking on these things, you can identify this with moments of a measure, so you are somehow in a classical analytic domain. You have a lot of analytic tools at your disposal. But if you're looking on all these traces, I mean, this is a very non-commutative object. You cannot identify this with moments of any measure because A and B don't commute. And you really have all alternating words in A and B. So this is a very huge family. Okay, but that's somehow things in which we are interested in free probability or non-commutative probability theory. So it's random matrices, but usually multi-matrix models, but you really want to understand the whole information contained in this family. Okay, so and as I told you here, this goes to a Gaussian family. I will come back to this, but maybe first let me fix maybe or extract the notation for this. So we find it convenient to put the information which we have there in this definition of having a second order limit distribution. So namely, if we have two such sequences of n by n random matrices, then we say that they have a second order limit distribution if essentially all these traces in all these words are Gaussian, which means the higher order cumulants go to zero. So these are the classical cumulants. The R cumulants go to zero, which is essentially the Gaussian behavior. And then we would like to have a limit behavior of the traces and the covariance in the limit. Okay, and here you have to take the normalized trace, and here you have to take the unnormalized trace to get something non-trivial. So somehow those things are on different scale, but I mean that's really the behavior which we want to keep in the limit. Okay, so if you have this essentially means that you have, for all this, you have Gaussian random variables. This is somehow the mean, which converges in this one. Then if you subtract again and you multiply it by n, you get a Gaussian distribution, and the covariance is given by these quantities. Okay, and of course, if I only have one random matrix, only an A or an B, then of course I can make the same definition, and then of course I just require the trace of powers of A and the covariance of trace of power of A and A to the A is there. And this is of course the case which is well understood. So if we have only one matrix, I mean, then these are more or less classical theorem. So if AN is a Gaussian, Wishart, or unitary random matrix, then we know that AN has a second order limit distribution. So we have this behavior to a Gaussian random variables, and in particular, we can describe this limit distribution quite explicitly. I mean, saying that we have a convergence to a Gaussian family means, okay, we have a convergence towards a Gaussian behavior, which more or less is this vanishing of the higher order cumulants, but of course it also means to understand the covariance and the mean in the limit. And because we have a big family, I mean, it's not so easy to understand it. And understanding the covariance essentially means you would like to diagonalize it. So you would like to know which things are independent. And in a Gaussian case, I mean, this has a long history in the physical literature, and I think maybe in the mathematical literature, it appeared in the paper of Johansson in a much more broader context, where we have a much more general matrix ensembles. In the Wishart case, so this was looked upon by Cabanal de Villard, but I think it also goes back quite early to papers of Johansson, where at least he showed the Gaussian limit in the Gaussian behavior in the limit. So Cabanal de Villard gave a quite explicit description of the covariance. And in a unitary case, these are some quite well-known results of Diaconis and Shashani. Okay, but yeah, what we now want to do is not to look on one random matrix, but on the corresponding case where we have more of them. So let me specify, I mean, in the following, I will essentially talk about two random matrices, but of course you can do all this for an arbitrary number of them. So what I want to do Yeah, or at least it's not too hard to see that if you have two of them and they are independent, and you choose them either from the Gaussian, Wishart, or unitary random matrices, then indeed you can see that you have this second order limit distribution. So you have this Gaussian behavior in the limit, which means the higher order cumulants disappear. And I mean, in the Gaussian case, this is just this usual genus expansion. You have to see that the higher order cumulants can be counted by things which go with the genus expansion, and you see that the order goes to zero the higher the cumulant is. And okay, in the other cases, I mean, you can do it with similar things. In the Wishart ensemble, I mean, this was done by Mingo and Niga, and in the unitary case, okay, this can also be done. I mean, this is not too hard. But what I really want to talk about is, I mean, so we know we have this convergence to Gaussian behavior, but the question is, can we really understand this limiting? Can we describe this Gaussian family in effective and nice way? So in particular, can we diagonalize the covariance? Can we say which functions become independent? So we know if we have all these functions, all these traces, they converge to Gaussian variables, but we have covariance between them. So it would be much nicer to take functions for which all these limit objects are independent. Okay, that's what I want to do in the following, but let me also switch a little bit the language. So namely, let me really go over to the limit n to infinity. So in free probability theory, we like it not to talk about limits of matrices, but we really want to like to talk about the limit itself. And of course, I mean, we want to keep in a limit the essential structure, and then we want to understand the structure. What structure do we have in a limit n to infinity? Of course, we have our random matrices, AN and BN, and in the limit, of course, it's just limit matrices, we call them A and B, but of course, these are just names for the limit, and the important information, of course, is contained in the limit of the expectation and the covariance of our traces. So first we have this limit, this expectation of the traces, and of course we can use this to define in the limit, I mean we assume that this limit exists, and of course so this defines us a state, or even a trace, on this algebra which is generated by A and B. Okay, so we can say this, the limit of the expectation of the traces gives us a functional on the algebra generated by A and B, and in the same way, we also want to keep the information about the covariance. This also exists in the limit, and this defines as a bilinear functional, which is ratio in each of its arguments, on this limit object. Instead of talking about the limit of numbers, we just take the limit itself and interpret them as states and bilinear functional on the limit and try to see some structure in them. At this point, you can forget that these things are coming from random matrices. You just have some numbers in the limit, and the point of free probability is that these numbers also occur in quite other situations. So, I mean, free probability theory comes from operator algebras. So you usually get these numbers as really functionals of some operators. It doesn't matter where it comes from. At least we have nice numbers here, and it turns out they have some nice structure in the background. What is the structure in the background? So what we are interested in, we want to say something about this phi of these words in A and B and rho. And the point is that indeed there is, in these situations where we coming from these random matrix models, there is some nice structure behind. Namely, in a sense, we can understand these numbers by knowing the one-dimensional situation. So namely, what we have is that, let's assume, so we know the moments of A and B in the limit, and in a sense, there is somehow a clear recipe how you get the moments, these alternating moments, from the moments of A and the moments of B. And this recipe is exactly this notion of freeness, which was introduced by Voiculescu, and which I will recall in a minute. What I introduced just recently with James Mingo was somebody is this notion of second order freeness, which somehow can be seen as a result forgetting the numbers, the corresponding these numbers rho, this bilinear function in alternating in words of A and B out of the corresponding quantities for A and the corresponding quantities for B. Okay, so let me recall Wojkulewski's definition. It's more structured. I mean, I have two things here. I mean, freeness is on a level of a linear functional. This thing here is on a level of a linear functional plus a bilinear functional. You have two objects. And I mean, you see, this also is calculated from phi and rho, not only from rho. So it's really about a pair of two things. Yeah, but let me first recall the definition of freeness, which is due to Wojkulewski, which is the basic definition in free probability theory. Okay, and we like to use a probabilistic language in this context. We are thinking of all these things which arise in the limit as really some kind of probabilistic objects, but non-commutative probabilistic objects. So we consider non-commutative probability space A phi, which just means we have an algebra A, and we have a linear functional or a state on it, phi, and then we take two elements from our algebra, we call them random variables, and we say they are in a very special situation, namely they are free, and this is a notion with respect to phi, so this means that mixed moments in A and B calculate in a very special way, and this way, okay, this definition is made in the form that it doesn't tell you how you calculate this mixed moment in general, but it only tells you that if you are looking on special mixed words in A and B, then you get zero. So it namely tells you that if you are looking, so the P's here are polynomials, so there's a polynomial of A, a polynomial of B, a polynomial of A, and if you are looking on a product alternatingly of polynomial of A, a polynomial of B, and so on, alternatingly, such that each of these polynomials vanishes under phi, then also their product vanishes under phi. And somehow the point is that if you have made this definition, then you have fixed all mixed moments of A and B. So, I mean, if you're interested in phi of AB, you can reduce it to this situation and you can calculate that this definition means that you must have this. Well, for example, something like this. I mean, this looks like independence, and I mean, you should think of freeness as some kind of non-commutative independence, but of course it's a rule which tells you how to calculate mixed moments, but of course it's a different rule than the classical independence, because I mean AB, this factor is given in a quite complicated way. I mean, these are polynomials in one variable, so it doesn't. Yeah, A and B don't commute, but I mean this is just the polynomial in A times the polynomial in B. I mean, of course, so this whole thing here is a non-commutative polynomial in A and B. But you specify special non-commutative polynomials, which are given by alternating products of this, for which you say that phi of in this situation is equal to zero. And okay, I should say these are your constant terms are allowed. So this might be 1 plus A plus 3 times A squared, something like this. And this allows you, the constant term allows you to reduce it to this situation. Okay, so this is definition of freeness. Complicated enough, but to make it even more complicated, I want to present you now definition of second order freeness. And I mean, if you see this for the first time, even the definition of freeness, I probably can't expect that you really digest it and you see that this is really important, but anyhow, at least freeness really has turned out to be a very important notion. And the second order of freeness hopefully also has some value. So what we are doing here, so now we assume we have a second order non-commutative probability space, which means we have an algebra A, and we have two things there. Namely, we have a linear functional phi, and we have this bilinear functional rho. And then we say that two random variables, A and B, are free of second order with respect to these two things, if, first of all, they are free with respect to phi, in the definition which I gave before, but then, in addition, I have something about rho, so namely now I have somehow a similar definition for telling you how rho is defined for alternating words. Again, I'm looking on, so rho has two arguments, each of them should be an alternating product of things, so of polynomials in each of the variables alternatingly, but phi of each of them should be zero as before, and then somehow the requirement is that rho, such a situation, calculates in a quite simple way. I mean, before, in the definition of freeness, it was always zero. Here it is more complicated. It's zero in a lot of cases, but if I have the same number of factors here and here, then essentially I have to look for pairings between those factors. So you should think of having this product here sitting on two circles. So this is one argument, this is the other argument, and then what you do here, you have to pair these things here. And you have to look for all possibilities for pairing the blue things with the blue things and the red with the red things. So you have the freedom of rotating the circles against each other, which gives you k possibilities for doing this. Okay, anyhow, a minute. I don't know. It's not clear to me whether there's any commutative analog of this. Yeah, it's not so clear to me. I mean, it's interesting. So if you have any suggestion what it could be, but I don't know at the moment. Okay, so I mean, it's essentially introduced in the context of random matrices for capturing this fluctuation in the limit, this covariance of the traces. Okay, but it has a structure quite similar to freeness, and again, I mean, one should note that this definition indeed is a special rule for calculating mixed moments. But you have to do it in terms of phi and rho. So rho of mixed moments is something which is calculated in terms of phi and rho of the single variables. And so the definition maybe might look complicated, but in a sense, I mean, if we are thinking of this rho as this limit of our covariance, then somehow, I mean, if we have this type of behavior in our random matrix models, then somehow this formula tells us what we should take for getting independent random variables. Because, I mean, this means we want to diagonalize rho, so we should get zero here. So this means we should have zero here, which tells us that it would be a good idea to take here polynomials which are orthogonal with respect to phi. Okay, so this tells us, this definition in particular contains the fact that if we have random matrix ensembles which are asymptotically free of second order, and of course, I mean, I still have to show this, but of course, probably we expect that this should be the case, then we should take, it's a good idea to take the orthogonal polynomials for the eigenvalue distribution of these polynomials in the limit. So let me call them pk for the a's and qk for the b's, and then what I had before tells me that rho is diagonal with respect to cyclic alternating products in these orthogonal polynomials, or to phrase it in terms of the traces for our random variables, if I take the family where I have here alternatingly the product of orthogonal polynomials in the a's and the b's, then this should be asymptotically Gaussian. I mean, that's essentially what we know, but they should also be independent. So here I should find functions of the a's and the b's which are really become independent. And of course, I mean, taking this family means I should do this modulo cyclic permutation. Of course, I have here a trace, so I mean, I can rotate things, and I identify the corresponding function. I only include them once in this family. Okay, so this tells us if we have the second order freeness for our random matrices, this tells us essentially what we should take or how we can diagonalize our covariance. And so I think it doesn't come as a surprise that indeed we can show that in these random matrices which I mentioned before, namely the Gaussian, the Wishart, and the unitary case, indeed we have this asymptotically freeness of second order. So this is essentially work which is done in this two preprint. And this, together with what I just said before, tells us what function of A and B in the corresponding cases we should take for getting nice independent Gaussian random variables in the limit. Also, maybe let me so essentially specify this, or we get somehow corollaries out of this. Also, namely, if you look on the Gaussian case, so if A and B both are Gaussian random matrices, then the limit is the semicircle, the eigenvalue distribution is the semicircle, and the orthogonal polynomials are the Chebyshevs of the second kind. So this tells us that if we want to take polynomials in A and B, we should take alternating products of the Chebyshevs of the second kind. Of course, we should add to them functions of only one variable, and there, I mean, we know by that is results in the one-dimensional case that we also should take Chebyshevs there, but it's the one of the other kind, the one which goes with the arcsine law. Okay, so I mean here you get something different than from the one-dimensional case. So for example, by this result of Johansson, you know that we have this Chebyshev of the first kind here. So we should take the Chebyshev of the first kind of the A's, Chebyshev of the first kind of the B's, together with alternating products of Chebyshevs of the second kind in A and B, and then, I mean, we get a family of random variables which are asymptotically Gaussian and independent. Okay, and this more dimensional case, I mean, this was essentially done by Cabanel Duvillard in his thesis. So we recover essentially his result. Then if we take Wishart matrices, so this was essentially done in a more combinatorial way with Tim Kusalik, then the eigenvalue distribution goes to the Marchenko-Pasteur distribution of our matrices. So we should take alternating products in the corresponding orthogonal polynomials to get independent random variables, and we should add to this the corresponding variables of one of the A's and of the B's, and there again one has not the same orthogonal polynomial, but one has again some kind of first kind analog of this. So this was also treated, the one-dimensional case was also treated by Cabanel Duvillard. So he showed that those polynomials are the one which you should consider in a one-dimensional case. And if we look on the unitary ensemble, so maybe here I'm doing it in the not just two variables, but that's two random matrices, but let's say R of them, then we get the following result, namely that if we look on the collection of unnormalized traces in cyclically reduced words, then this converges to a Gaussian family where the covariance is given by the number of cyclic matchings. So this means what we should just take words in the free group which are different under cyclic rotations to get independent random variables. Okay, so this was derived by myself, Jamie Mingo and Piotr Snyadi, and independently by Florin Radulescu in some other context. And I mean this is the generalization of this case of the result of Diaconis and Chachani, which where you consider only one unitary random matrix, which tells that the trace of U to the K goes to a Gaussian family, and the covariance between two of them is given, so they are independent if K and L are different, and the variance is given by K, which is just the number of cyclic rotations, which you have to match a circle with K points with itself. And somehow in this case, there's no difference between the one-dimensional case and the more-dimensional case. Essentially, you don't have to switch between different kinds of orthogonal polynomials. It's just the monomials in this case. Okay, so I think that's what I wanted to say. So I hope you have got some kind of idea of what we are doing in free probability theory. Thank you very much.